I like beer. I want beer. Let's kick off. Now we have a Hantverksbira podcast back again, and we have Richard from Vault City.
Hello.
Really nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're the marketing manager of Vault City. And Vault City is, I can't say British, I must say Scottish, right?
Scottish Scottish brewery. We're in, based in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I really love your accent. Yeah. But it's still possible to understand it.
Hopefully.
So, yeah. It's
I'll speak very slowly.
Some Scottish guys are... impossible to understand, but you're okay.
That's okay. Good. So it's better than my Swedish, which so far I've got, thank you, I've got hejsan, tack, and then a few swear words, which I won't say.
That's normally what you learn first.
The bad words, So for those who doesn't know Vault City, what is your ASP in the market? What's your edge?
We make... modern sour beer, which is very much a modern spin on a very traditional style. If you look at the spectrum of craft beer, a lot of people would traditionally have ended their journey with, you know, saisons or, you know, potentially lambics and very kind of complex flavors in sour beer. We saw the opportunity to come in at the kind of other end of that and create something that is still maintains that very traditional style of mixed fermentation sour beer, but creates an accessibility to it, so it's recognizable flavors. It's a play on, you know, what essentially might be someone's first beer or someone's new favorite beer.
Yeah. I mean, for us Swedes, the beer from Great Britain has always been like traditional style beers. I mean, when we only have like 30-40 beers in Sweden in total. Now we have some British ales or miles and so on, but this is totally different kind of British beer.
I mean, absolutely.
But you have like a conservative market in Great Britain, or?
I think we're very lucky because a lot of people enjoy Vault City beer because of the kind of traditional mixed fermentation style. Mm-hmm. But we also have a lot of non-beer drinkers that enjoy our beer. And I think that allows us to create a range of different products. We can have things that are definitely for your more seasoned sour sippers, and also some people that we would say are maybe, we'd call them craft curious, people that are trying sour beer for the first time. We're very lucky in the sense that craft beer can be quite a saturated market, especially in the UK, but we aren't competing with quite as many breweries, especially making mixed fermentation beer, because if you're a brewery that makes clean beer with lagers, IPAs, you wouldn't want our sour house culture anywhere near your brewery, whereas that's all we make. So it means that we can really specialize. And if you do something over and over again, turns out you get very good at it.
So how long have you been around? You said like 5 years?
Brewery, yeah, 5 years. It will be 6 years old in July.
Okay. So. And was this the sort of ambition from the beginning to do sour kind of beers? Or has that something turned over the years since they started the brewery?
Stephen started the brewery in 2018, and he's very much a keen home brewer. And he was making mostly New England IPAs. Mm-hmm. But they were trading yeast samples through the post, which is the geekiest thing I can think of. but they were trading yeast samples through the post with other brewers abroad, and they stumbled across a yeast sample. And they basically created their own culture. And it was a wild yeast. It was Lithuanian.
Lithuanian?
Yeah, okay. The very original one. So it's a very, as I say, it's a very traditional base beer that we make. It's a mix of Saccharomyces and Lactobacillus. And I think once they saw the accessibility of it, there's a lot of, you know, there's a tart profile, but it's not overly sour. Lots of tropical notes and pear character that comes through just in the base beer. And then we'll condition that again on tons of fruit purees, juices, and zests. When they do that, it gives you almost like a blank canvas for what you'd like to make. And I think that's when Stephen thought this could be something that, you know, could be potentially very interesting, okay, not just to craft fans, but to non-craft beer drinkers as well.
So that was pretty much the original idea then to do sour beers. And that has not changed now, almost 6 years later.
Absolutely.
And as you said, I mean, it's an interesting market. I anticipate that it's,
it's growing and it's easier to attract maybe more people to enjoy and drink that kind of beer than the regular beers.
I would say so. I think if you're someone who has either tried traditional beers, you know, or very typical beers and decided that you didn't like that flavor, then sour beers are really, really good way to sort of get into that, because it does have a lot more of a kind of fruity, approachable flavor profile rather than something that's a bit more typically bitter.
Yeah.
But yeah, we probably make 95% sour beer and then 5% imperial stouts. I think that was just historically because at the time, nobody thought it was a sensible idea to start a sour-only brewery.
Right.
It was quite laughable, really, the idea. Whereas, you know, they were doing it on very small scales. They were making 400-litre batches of beer and selling them locally.
Yeah.
But very early on, people took a keen interest in it, and that's where it started to grow.
But I mean, you said before, like, no regular brewery would even get near your place due to the infection risks.
Yes.
So how do you manage that internally if you're not only doing sour, so you're doing like the imperial stouts, for example? How do you make sure that you don't get infection spread since you are that much into sour beers all over the place?
Very thorough cleaning. We obviously don't do lagers or IPAs, so the risk is managed, and it's very, very infrequent that we'll release a stout, maybe 4 or 5 times a year.
Yeah.
Recently, we've been doing a lot more of them, but originally they used to use the same culture in the stouts, but they haven't been doing that for a couple of years, basically for that exact reason. They don't want to take that risk of an infection. So,
you brought some beers for us here as well.
So, which one? Oh, you can present them first.
Yep. So this is probably a window into my favorite beers because they're all 6, 7, and 8%. So a little bit stronger.
No, it's normal for us Swedes.
So I've got Blackcurrant Kir Royale.
Blackcurrant Kir Royale.
That's the one. Not to be confused with the Kir wine that I've been speaking to a lot of people about. So this is based on a champagne cocktail with cassis. So it's Scottish blackcurrants and white wine grapes. So that gives you a really juicy, tart, kind of almost vinous character. So sort of wine-like character that comes through from that. Pear, vanilla, cinnamon swirl is one of our dessert pastry style sours. The base beer itself has a lot of pear character to it, which is why I think when we use pear puree in the second stage of fermentation, that you get such a wonderful overall rounded flavor. So it's one of my favorite fruits that we work with.
But it's the same yeast strain that you have, or yeast culture they have in all of these.
Yes.
And you said like this one has a lot of pears, like as the raw beer.
Yeah.
And so is that true for the others as well then?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's sort of your house flavor.
Yeah.
So if you just do a sour beer, it will be a sour beer with pear.
Like tropical notes and pear notes, definitely. Okay. Cinnamon and vanilla are where we really dial up the pastry element. That's where you get something that's definitely the sweeter end of the spectrum. And then finally, we've got a beer that we call Stupid. So this is a new range that we launched this year. And it's basically something that people say to us all the time, which is, why can't beer just taste like beer? And people say that to us a lot because we'll make beers that taste like pear, vanilla, cinnamon swirl. And ultimately, we wanted to poke a bit of fun at that kind of idea, because to us, like...
You can also say that, okay, there's like 1 million other brewers that just does the regular beer. So
if you want a lager or an IPA, I don't think you would struggle to find one. And that's very much the attitude that we have towards it. But we also acknowledge that sometimes we make things that are a little silly. And for us, that's why we've called this one Stupid. So it's strawberry, banana, and coconut cream. But the main difference between this one and the other two is that in this one we've used unfermented fruit. So essentially like a much brighter, fresher, and juicier taste that comes from that. This is inspired by the American style smoothie sours. It's going to be a new range for us.
Right. So there's like a one with blackcurrant here, then you had the one with more pear, cinnamon, and then the left one with the coconut cream and banana.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's like a fruit salad.
It's a fruit salad, yeah.
Which one should we start with? You know best.
I think we start with Kir Royale.
Yep. Lovely. Is any of those available in Sweden? You know that?
We do have small volumes in Systembolaget.
Yep.
I'll probably butcher the pronunciation of that.
No, no, no. It was perfect.
It's small volumes, but we are working. We work with a cask, an importer that has worked with us for a couple of years.
Yep.
And we're looking to get more beer out in Sweden. So hopefully we'll win a tender soon and get yep. more of a volume out here.
In Gothenburg, we have more or less the best Systembolaget shop called Ölstudion, beer studio.
Oh, wow.
And then it's the only Systembolaget, I believe, in Sweden that have a fridge for the hoppy beers.
Oh, right, okay.
So,
for the rest, all shelf stable.
They'd... Yeah, yeah. And Ölstudion has quite an amazing range of really odd beers. So probably your beers fits there as well.
Perfect. Skål.
Okay, Skål. Skål. Let's try this one. So this is the current one.
Blackcurrant one, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely pink head on it.
It's like Svarta Vinbärsaft. Mm-hmm. One of those big Swedish, like blackcurrant
soda
or yeah. juice. Mm-hmm. You feel that directly in the...
I mean, it's sour, but it's not awfully sour in mm-hmm. it's balanced sourness, really. I mean, when you have like a blackcurrant or redcurrant or whitecurrant, it is a bit more tart in the mouth.
It's super interesting, actually. I mean, this is a sour beer that still has sour characters. Mm-hmm. It's not too fruity as such. It's not like you're drinking a juice. Mm-hmm. It's still having like the sour beer characters, but it's not overly sour that you can get on some of the Labix. This mm-hmm. is more like balanced from that perspective.
Definitely. That's always what we're going for.
It's very interesting.
Actually. You wouldn't believe it was 8%.
No.
It hides the ABV very well.
Yep, very well. So, I actually appreciate this even more than the lemon one mm-hmm. I had before in your monter or your stand. Sorry,
there's a nice mouth feeling to it as well. So mm-hmm. do you use like oats or wheat in it?
In this particular one, we've used oats. Malted barley and oats.
It's oats.
Yeah.
So that's sort of creating this like a little bit creamier mouth feel as well, and a little bit more. Wider spectrum.
Yes.
I think that sort of embodies it a little bit, because if you didn't have that, it might be a little bit too thin mm-hmm. and it will just go down too quick. Mm-hmm. Now you get a little bit more time to experience all the flavors as well. So that's absolutely. Super nice. So, but you said you're focusing on like modern sours.
Yes.
So then I anticipate that non-modern sours are like Belgian style lambic can of beers.
Yeah.
Is that where like the brewers got their initial inspiration?
Definitely. I think some of the team, there's a wide range of favorite beers. For example, Joe, who's our business development manager, he loves smoked lagers. And Jeremy, who works on the cold side in the brewery, he used to work at a place that made kombucha. So he's a big kombucha fan. Angus, who's our basically like production lead, he used to work for Williams Brothers, and then he worked for a brewery called Fallon. So he's kind of more into sort of, I guess, like traditional lagers and IPAs. So there's quite a different mix of people, mm-hmm. But together they come together and they make some exceptional sour beer. Mm.
But you don't only export to Sweden. I mean, you have like 10 countries, right?
Probably more, but there's definitely five or six that are major export markets for us. Sweden, Denmark, Norway,
so Scandinavia is
it's
a big one.
I think sour beers particularly, it's grown a lot in the UK, and I think we've championed a lot of that growth, but it's definitely happening in other countries as well. Singapore is a really big one for us as well.
Oh, Singapore.
They really like some of the kind of exotic fruits that we'll use at times, and obviously the weather is unbelievable out there, so they like things that are nice and bright and refreshing.
But also in this high ABV?
We do a mix. Our core range is a lot more sessionable strength beers. So Cloudy Lemonade will sit at 4.2. And then Strawberry Sunday is 5%. So we have a lot of sort of session strength beers. Yeah. We've also started making table strength beers. So between 2 and 3%. Yeah. And we're seeing a kind of growing demand for like very, very low ABV stuff.
Interesting. I've never seen that in Sweden. That kind of low ABV beer. In Sweden, we have the tax regulations, and it's not allowed to sell beers higher than 3.5.
Yeah.
That's the limit for the normally grocery stores. But to have like this kind of sours at our grocery store would be interesting, but probably quite expensive as well.
Yeah. Some of them, these ones, the session strength ones, are kind of a lot more the entry level pricing. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of these ones that are 8-10%, they're obviously a lot more expensive. Yeah, yeah. And it gives us a bit more wiggle room when we want to do something silly.
We talked a little bit about the volume before. Mm-hmm. You said you are about to move to a new production plant.
Yes.
But you have a volume of 1.5 million liters a year.
Yeah, that's kind of rough annual output for us. Just
compared
now.
To the Swedish craft breweries, that's quite a lot. It's more or less double up towards the largest one.
The largest one, yeah, if you're going for craft beers. And I mean, and you sort of reached that in 5-6 years time frame. Mm-hmm. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, the brewery's still completely independent as well. Mm-hmm. So Stephen started it from his kitchen, and they were brewing 400 liter batches of anything that they fancied.
Yep.
And then they were doing contract brewing, so they rented a space in Dundee, and then they moved from Dundee to our own dedicated warehouse, which at the time looked bloody massive. 5,000 square feet, looked like it would be impossible for us to fill it.
Yep.
We had racking, we had a small brew kit, and then we bought one large fermenter and stuck with all the rest of our 400 liter fermenters. So we had a bit of a change up last year once we realized that actually we were not only going to max this place out, but probably go beyond that. So we did the New York style architecture where you can't build out the way, so you just go up. So we have now 75 hec and 150 hec tall fermenters in a very closed-in space. We've done a lot in that particular unit that we rent, but we're very lucky that a place came up about 20 minutes drive from the current brewery, and we bought it. We bought it about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So you're still in the old spot and you're planning to move. So will you move everything or will you keep both?
Our lease ends for the current place in Portobello a year in October, I think.
Mm.
And obviously we are independent, so we don't have huge budgets. So we've had enough to buy it, but not enough to... It's like buying a new house and having no furniture.
Yep.
So there's an empty brewery that we're going to fill, but the new brewery is 7 times the size, so there's a lot of room for growth for us in there.
Yeah, really?
That's very much going to be our home.
So you're planning to move everything over, so you want to like stack up new stuff. So there would be some downtown coming here then when it comes to capacity and brewing?
I think we'll do our best to stop any downtime, but we'll need to see, because the way that we brew beer means that there's very few people would be, you know, able to get a Vault City style beer, you know, elsewhere. So we don't want to let anyone down, and we want to keep making beer. Plus, we have to.
Mm.
We've got a lot of people in the team now, so there's probably 18 of us between the brewery and the office, and then maybe six or seven more across our two bars in Edinburgh. We'll likely invest in some new equipment, but we'll take a wee while to get there, I think.
Before we move on, I think we will love to try the pear, cinnamon, and so on. And then we can have a little chat about the two bars. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I was going to get to the bars, and also now when you, because one of the possibilities you had before is that you can actually took a short walk from the bars to the brewery,
mm-hmm.
who want to do like a brewery tour. So mm-hmm. when you're moving out now, do you plan to have like your own tap room close to the brewery in the new place as well? Or
the new place, although it's only 20 minutes away from the current place, it's a lot more remote. There's much less public transport out mm-hmm. to it. So I think we've got a few questions to ask ourselves what we'd like to do. I'd like to start a Vault City bus,
mm-hmm.
Ferry people across, because I think it's still quite an interesting thing to see.
Yep.
Because we only launched brewery tours in January this year. And it's been going fantastic. The people that are doing it are really enjoying it. We've created a sour school program, which is essentially a
sour school program.
Part of the brewery experience. The tour involves like a kind of sensory tasting and mixing exercise. So
do their own beers pretty much. So you have like the base beer, and then you take your own fruits and mix it up.
So we've got a range of purees and different kind of juices that people can use. And then we've got our base beer. So people can try it on its own, and then they can essentially add their own fruit. We've been getting a bit more adventurous with what we're letting people do. But actually, so far, people have come up with some great ideas.
Mm. Oh, lovely, lovely.
Even to the extent that you could use them for commercial stuff, or
I think we'd need to buy them a beer first.
You don't want to say it.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe all of these are like customer experimentations.
Yeah. Do you know what we'll take inspiration from anywhere. One of our beers was from a MasterChef recipe. It was coffee poached pear. And then what was the last bit? Praline crumble. So it was a really, really nice award-winning dessert that they did on MasterChef, and we thought that's going to be a sour beer. So we'll take inspiration from anywhere, and you'd be surprised where some of the best ideas come from.
So pear, vanilla, cinnamon, swirl. I mean, the first one was really appealing to me, and I'm hard. I can hardly think that this one can be as good as the first one. But
this one's very strong in the cinnamon. If you try this one, you'll probably agree. It's not a particularly summery beer. I think it's very much a kind of autumnal winter.
If you just sniff it and the aroma, you feel the pear, you feel the cinnamon. Clearly. Vanilla maybe, but it's a little bit hidden behind the other two. So. Mm-hmm.
You like cinnamon.
In
your like yogurt, what's that called? Vanilla, cinnamon, and apple.
It's like apple pie.
Yeah, apple pie.
But in yogurt form. But this is close to it's pear pie.
It's a pear pie. Yeah.
Okay. The taste is actually fresh and fruity and not overly sour. In a way,
this one is less sour compared to the previous one, at least the experience of it.
Yeah, well, it's balanced.
It's balanced, yeah. Okay. So, but the sour profile of this one is not as tart as the previous one, but that might be because you have black currant there.
Yeah, black currants can be quite tannic.
Yeah. So it sort of drives that feeling much more. This one is a little bit more balanced, as you said. It's a nice experience. It's you feel the flavors up here and cinnamon, definitely. Vanilla maybe coming up, but it's a different kind of beer.
Very unique, this one.
Very different.
This one's 6.8%, so if you notice, my words will start slurring a little.
we are comparing now. We had the Rodenbach Grand Cru barrel aged for 10 years yesterday. So we are
fantastic.
We have that in our mind fresh.
That's much more lambic style. It's more challenging compared to these ones.
Definitely. With the new location, we'll have the ability to have a barrel store.
Ah.
So I think that's where we're going to start to do things that are much smaller batches, things that are a little more kind of unique and definitely less commercially viable, but also kind of appealing to that person who, you know, craft beer obsessives, people that really love traditional sours as well. I think this new place is going to give us a bit of breathing room, but it's also going to give us space to experiment more.
Yeah. I mean, this blackcurrant version, the sour one, you can almost twist into like not the barley wine, but the imperial stout or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can have that kind of berries in that beverage as well.
We've been doing a lot of imperial stouts recently. We've only got sour beers with us in Sweden just now, but we've been doing the occasional imperial stout. We did one at Christmas that was DDF gingerbread. And it was the highest rated beer in Scotland last year. So it was very, very cool for us. We got an Untapped award for it as well, which was excellent. But it's nice because the brewing team love making sours, but it's nice to flex their skills as well because they make award-winning sours.
That's great.
We discussed the yeast culture a little bit before. So you're using your own house yeast, which is unique for this beer and unique to your brand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that that's sort of the secret to success?
I think so. I think a lot of breweries that make IPAs and lagers that then make a sour will do kettle souring. And I think sometimes the flavor profile for that, I don't believe is going to be as nice as a mixed firm. That's not true in all cases, but certainly my personal preference is the mixed fermentation sour. And I think that unique house culture, because it's something that we've had since 2018, we keep samples in a lab, we keep some on site, and they have a hard job balancing that to keep the flavor profile exactly as it is. I think that consistency has been a big part of the brand's success.
Mm. So, and you also referred to mixed fermentation here. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that you do like use kettle sour techniques initially? So you use lactic acid as part of the boil, and then you use your specific wild yeast, so to speak, as part of the fermentation process? Or how do you like doing the mixed thing?
We'll do a mixed pitch, basically, of Saccharomyces and Lactobacillus. So there's no kettle souring at all.
Okay.
When we keep essentially a slurry on site of our culture, yeah. And then they'll basically infuse that into the tank.
Yep.
It really does take a lot to manage it. Jeremy, who's basically looking after the cellar, he's got a tough job. Lots of work with an external lab to make sure that we're managing that correctly. Yeah. But we are looking to bring that on site as well as soon as we get this new place.
Yep.
So big ambitions.
So how long does it ferment?
The initial fermentation, probably about 7 to 10 days. And then we'll have a secondary fermentation where we'll condition it on fruit puree and juices and zests and different adjuncts.
Okay. So, and that would take like a couple of weeks more, or?
Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
We turn around.
So you pretty much can have a turnaround in 1 month?
Less than that, definitely. Well, some beers more than others.
But I mean, that's a big difference compared to like traditional lambics. Yeah. I mean, there's years where you need to sort of walk through all the different phases of the different bacteria that need to process different parts of the beer.
Mm-hmm.
And normally you put them on like barrels as well.
Yeah.
You utilize that. But you do everything on steel tank.
Yeah, yeah. We've done.
Unless you have your barrelage program, of course. But for like the normal beers, you ferment on steel tanks and then you sort of mature them on steel tanks as well.
Yes.
Okay.
We've occasionally done barrel-aged sours. We did one a few years ago with Proclady, and it went into classic Clady casks. And we basically did a whiskey sour style, like sour ale. But we had fresh lemon balm that was foraged on Isla next to the distillery. They shipped all the Proclady casks out of Isla to Edinburgh. It's the first time they've ever left the island to be used for barrel aging. So it's quite an honour for us to get to do that. And then we also added in around 200 kilos of Scottish heather honey from the Scottish Bee Company, and it gave it this unbelievable flavour. We barrel aged that for 9 months, but in the future we'll have things that we're looking to barrel age for years. We want to really, really dip more than a toe into that arena.
You have your bars, Wee Walt, is that correct?
That's
and,
the one.
And Port Walt.
That's the one.
You have some kind of collaboration with other breweries there, because I guess you don't only want to serve sour beers.
Yes.
You have when you want to serve like IPAs and lagers and so on as well.
Absolutely. We opened the Wee Vault in 2021. It's possibly the smallest bar in Edinburgh. It can take 15 people and one person serving. But it has 24 taps. So we usually have 16 Vault City taps. We tend to keep 7 or 8 for guest beer. And we have a really, really good beer fridge that's stocked with some pretty interesting and unique beers. With the Wee Vault, it's in the centre of Edinburgh, so you get a lot more passing traffic. A lot of people that are very into craft beer might use that almost like a little bottle shop or a stop-in. Whereas Porty Vault's a lot more of a community-based pub. It's out in Portobello. It's much, much kind of a quieter area. Although it's only 20 minutes really from the city centre, it's a different world out there. You're next to the seaside, next to the beach, so lots of families. So we tend to do kind of a lot more standard beers. So we'll have one guest beer, and we probably sell more lager there than anything else.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not obviously a home for us to try and portray what the brand's about. So
of course
there's 36 taps in Porty Vault, and
36
we keep 24 of them for Vault City.
Ooh.
So it's quite a lot, but then that leaves us 12 for guest beer. So
12 for lagers.
Yeah.
on this small bar, do you need to like reserve your spot in order to get there, or
the Wee Vault? It depends. If it's a weekend, I would book your place. If it's a weekday, you can usually drop in. Porty Vault takes about 40 people. It's much, much bigger. So we do pop-up kitchens in Porty Vault as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a food offering always, which is great, because it's much better for that kind of community feel.
And you said beach. In my world, Scotland, Edinburgh, beach. So is that like one day a year, or?
I mean, you wouldn't go skinny dipping in it, but people probably do.
After spending some time at your tap room, maybe.
A couple of 8% beers.
And take like a winter bath and everything, right?
Every year on New Year's Day, They do a thing called the Duke. And Duke. It's a very D-O-O-K.
D-O-O-K.
It's a very Scottish word, but it's a kind of a term for like basically like a jump or a dip.
Okay.
And they run into the freezing cold water, and you get a lot of wild sort of swimmers out there.
Yep.
So lots of people do that, and it's to cure your hangover. I don't know if it works because I'm too scared to do it.
Are you doing some collabs with the foreign brewers? I mean, how do you explore new markets? I mean, you have to be to reach out for the new markets. Are you doing that via collabs or
collabs help? Attending festivals like this obviously are a great help as well, because it means that people who maybe haven't heard of your beer or tried your beer before give it a go. But collabs are a great way to do it. We
have you done any collabs with the Swedish breweries? Or?
Nerd and Elm 11.
Yeah,
They were the collab brewery that helped us brew DDF Gingerbread. The one that I mentioned was the highest rated in Scotland last year. So they came through to us. We've done a few beers with them in Sweden as well. So about a year and a half ago, we did a Millionaire Shortbread, a stout and a sour, which is a fantastic combo, really great flavors. So we're looking to do more though. So hopefully we'll get to do some collabs next time we're here.
I saw that that Nerd was should participate at your craft beer festival in Edinburgh, Big Swally, it's called.
That's the one. Big Swally. So Swally is
Swally.
That's a very Scottish word for a big drink.
A big drink. Okay. I saw that Nerd should participate there. It was the only like Swedish brewery I saw on that list.
We're very close to them. Yeah. We are looking at some other international options at the moment, but I'll keep my lips sealed for now until we get it confirmed. It's October 19th at the Edinburgh O2 Academy.
So that's something to look out for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be a really fantastic festival.
But it's not like beach weather in October in Scotland.
Jesus Christ, no. I would wear a heavy coat, a scarf, gloves, a hat.
In that case, you would need the stupid beer.
Oh, if you're going to do something stupid.
We're going to do the stupid beer.
Yeah, let's do
you
it.
You have to swirl it around a bit.
Yeah, you want to agitate the can for this one. Because of the volume of fruit puree and coconut cream.
And it was actually, I told you before, but it was in this location we, for the first time, had an experience maybe similar to this one.
Yeah.
Where we had the Croatian brewery, Pulfer Brewery, and who had some kind of smoothie pastry sour. Okay.
So, is it a sour or just a smooth?
It was
a sour?
Sour, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to hold the mic close to this so you can hear it glugging out of the can.
It seems a little bit similar to that one.
In Sweden, we have it's branded like a health beverage called Proviva.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that is actually a beverage that some brewers use for their
beers.
Sours. Yeah.
Okay.
It is. Yeah,
they do. Proviva juice.
Proviva juice.
Sour beers.
Yeah. And this is like I told you before. If I smell a hint of banana, I smell only banana. And I have very much a banana in this one.
You'll get coconut on the palate.
The coconut aroma is also coming out quite a lot.
Like a
I think it's
Scottish
more
coconut. Yeah.
Grown locally.
And there's maybe in the background there's some sort of a hint of, could it be a vanilla hint as well? It's like, it's a little bit of a creamy.
It's coconut cream that we've used.
Yeah,
so
maybe coconut
has,
is sort of giving you that like high pitched. It felt like a vanilla first when you just.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely the consistency of a thick fruit smoothie. This is homage to American style sours and definitely something we're going to do more of. The whole idea is that, you know, why be serious when you can be stupid? And we just acknowledge and have poke a bit of fun at ourselves for making such silly beers.
So in this case, I like the thickness of the beer. So is that mainly due to fruit purees that you're using, or using something else to sort of make it thicker?
I mean, the fruit puree volumes that we use, we're typically using between 1 and 2 tons at any given point. Some of our beers that we've done have been sort of 400 or 500 grams of fruit per liter of beer, so they become in these instances like a fruit puree smoothie. And for us, this is definitely a special edition. It's not something that you're
normally doing, right? Yeah. So this is something special. Okay. Is this the first time you actually do this can of beer? So have you done it in the past as well?
Nope. This is a brand new series that launched in January.
Yep. So how has it been received so far?
Brilliant. It's rated exceptionally highly on Untappd. And we've seen a really big demand for it. So I think for us, this is definitely going to be a line of stupid beers.
Yeah, we've got to go to stupid two and three and four, maybe.
We've got one in the tank right now. So.
It will be interesting to see how this one will be received here in Öl & Whiskey Mässa, because last year that Croatian brewery had the top three places, all of them, with these kind of beers. So it will be really interesting to see.
That is interesting. Hopefully, the people that have tried it so far seem to have really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Or they've lied right to my face.
Is there any way to have this on tap? Or is it only on can?
We have it in keg
as well. It's possible.
It is possible.
You turn it like once in a...
We would recommend that agitating the keg once a day, to be honest with you.
Once a day, yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, you'll get...
With the sediment and everything will be in the bottom.
Yeah. You won't get quite a consistent pour. We recommend it with the can. So you can imagine what we would recommend with the keg.
Yeah. for sure. Okay, Johan, now you have tried three very different beers if you compare to what you used to try or taste. What do you think? What's your
For me personally, I like Black Currant to begin with. So for me, that is like the best one here, at least personally. So the Black Currant.
Oh, yeah.
It's maybe a little bit more closer conservative than the other ones.
Yeah.
But it's still like I'm not too super fan of sour beers to begin with. But that one sort of gave it an interesting pitch, where you still have the roots in the tradition.
Yeah.
But you amplify it a little bit with classic fruits. I guess that one comes closer to like traditional Belgium, like Creek or like raspberry-based beers.
Yeah.
That one will be closer to that one. These two other ones are like exciting.
Yeah.
But for me, like that, they are more into like traditional beers. Well, it's like a milkshake, pretty much.
Yeah.
I can go and buy a milkshake, or I can go with this one. If we're going to go for a beer, for me personally, then I'll probably pick one that is more beer-like.
This might send a Belgian brewer into a coma.
Yeah. Probably. So, but I don't know about you, Victor. What do you think?
Yeah, for me, definitely the Black Currant as well. I mean, that was super tasty, and I really love that one. Johan also mentioned, I mean, he's not that much into sours, and for me, that one could turn me into sours, the Black Currant one. The smoothie one is, it's more the texture in my mouth that makes it a bit hard for me to, it's like a mindfuck beer, so to say. But the Black Currant one, that one is really appealing. Yeah.
So what is your personal favorite?
Gueux Royale is my favorite as well, to be honest with you. Although I've very much enjoyed the Stupid series. We're talking about... our next stupid release in May.
Your next stupid release.
And it's already going to be even more stupid. So we're doing it as a collab with a brewery in the UK called Staggeringly Good. So this new one's going to be called Staggeringly Stupid. So it's dialing up the stupidity of it, really. We're going to do a Blue Hawaiian, which is like a kind of
Blue Hawaiian.
A cocktail inspired smoothie sour. But it's in tank at the moment, so they're probably finishing the first stage.
One of the things that I sort of thought about when you drank this one, like a milkshake or potentially a cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're pretty much close to that border here, where you can like a pre-canned cocktail that is more like we have coconut, you have like the creaminess into it, you have some citrus vibes due to the sourness. So that's sort of crossing the border between
definitely
like the cocktail world or the drink world and the beer world.
Absolutely.
You do that with sours and fruit puree, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. We get a lot of questions asking, is it really beer?
Yeah.
And I would say, yes, of course it is. Just ask the tax man. the questions we get a lot about it, what can you really call it beer? But it's essentially still like beer ingredients. We're looking at malted barley, water, yeast, very occasionally hops. It just obviously veers and derails very quickly to what people might expect once we kind of once we kind of move into the fruiting element.
But do you have hops in these ones?
Not in these ones, no. Okay. These are all
still, but yeah. Because I saw that you had like a sour IPA as well. As part yeah, of your lineup.
Yeah, we have a Cloudy Lemonade, which is dry hopped with Citra and Nelson Sauvin. Mm. We do a lot of sour IPAs. I absolutely adore them, but they're not hugely popular in the UK. Okay. I'm trying my best.
Yep. So that sour IPA then, is that still using the same yeast culture?
Yeah.
And then you're using a regular IPA and you do the same, like using the same kind of hops for regular IPAs?
Yeah. So okay. We've tried different kind of elements at times, but Cloudy Lemonade is the most consistent one that we brew. The rest we'll do specials and small batches of because we know it's the big silly fruited sours that people really love about Bolt City. As yeah. I say, you could be at an IPA if you want an IPA.
Sure. I mean, it's you have your niche market and you have your expertise.
Yeah.
And it's fun to experiment over styles, etc., etc. But it will be always be experiments. These are experiments as well. But I think look at sour beers; they have a long tradition. But nowadays, people are like, what do you call the modern sours? I mean, they are breaking new boundaries, mm-hmm. moving things a little bit further ahead, which I think is interesting because looking back from now, maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now, this might be very well be like sort of a style. Mm-hmm. It might already be there, which sort of stands apart from the traditional sours and all other traditional beers as well. Yeah.
Sour beer obviously is very prevalent in America. The UK is probably a couple of years behind that, but Bolt City, we've certainly championed that kind of style of accessible sour beer, and that's got us listed in nationwide supermarkets as well. So, you know, you can buy some very unique kind of special editions, but also like in the middle of Tesco, you know, if you're picking up your weekly shop, you can also buy a sour beer, which, you know, if you'd asked somebody that 5 years ago, you know, they would have been like, well, this is a bad idea. So it's been kind of nice to see it like defy the odds in a lot of ways. You know, that growth's been very natural for us, and it's meant that we can really experiment. We've got a great community who've backed us up. You know, they've really bought into what we do, and that's allowed us to really play about with the types of flavors. Speaking to someone recently, and they said that they didn't think we were a sour beer brewery. They said we were a flavor brewery. And I thought that was an interesting concept because actually, like, if you take sour out of it, a lot more people might try it.
Yep.
There's a preconception as to what you're going to get in this can. You know, I meet loads of people who say, I don't like sour beer. Yep. And it's probably because they've tried something extremely traditional, you know, with, you know, extremely tart flavors, like very
acidy.
Funk acid, you know, something that is quite a complex flavor profile, and that there's elements of that for us, but for the most part we flipped that on its head, and it's trying to get those people to try a sour again, you know, to try a Bolt City sour. That's our goal.
But I mean that ambiguity is sort of a proof of the thing that we said before, like this might turn into something new. Because it's not the old thing, it's not something that is the same, and people like argue, is this that or is it that?
Yeah. But
it's probably something new shaping up.
Yeah.
So I still think that it would be going forward like a new kind of space, and then maybe it's not called sour. Yeah.
That's, to be honest, that could be great for us.
So, but you said about the adoption in Scotland, you said you're maybe a couple of years behind the US when it comes to these kind of beers.
When
you look at like the craft beer wave going back, so do you think, have you been on that train for a long time, or have you recently catched up to it? So let's say like the US started like 90s, beginning of 2000, we started here like 2005-06 maybe. Mm-hmm. So in Scotland, where were you at that timeline? Were you still in traditional beers, or were you already picking up the new interesting craft beer trends?
We're probably similar, as you've said there. Stephen, I'll use him as an example, who started Bolt City. He got into craft beer around about 2013, 2014, and then he got into home brewing after that, and it was very much that boom, this huge trend that started. It was almost like an underground movement. But yeah, you're right, America probably was further ahead in terms of that trend, in terms of that journey. I think these days there's a kind of maybe more of a globalization effect where, you know, the internet and social media connects people a lot more than it would have even back then. So you do probably see that trend gap closing much quicker.
Yep.
And there's some really fantastic breweries in Scotland and the UK. So I think that, you know, you're probably starting to see some stuff in the domestic market that's really, really interesting and really cutting edge as well. Yep. So.
So do you think Scotland has been a little bit, so the relationship between like Scotland and UK or mm-hmm. England, are you like more experimental on your side and they are more traditional, or are you pretty much the same?
I don't know. That's a loaded question. Well, I think specifically in Edinburgh, we are very lucky because we have Heriot Watt Brewing and Distilling course there. So our stand is right next to Amundsen. Their head brewer studied in Edinburgh at Heriot Watt. We have rounds and rounds of fresh graduates that are going out and becoming brewers and starting their own breweries. And a lot of them obviously are people that live in Scotland or stay in Edinburgh. So that city is so rich with expertise and talent and lots of like very ambitious young brewers. Hmm. So I feel like we're quite lucky there, just even on our doorstep. Whether or not one country's more adventurous or kind of
more traditional,
I couldn't comment, but yeah, Edinburgh, I think we're very lucky specifically. Yeah.
So Edinburgh, so let's say it like this, Edinburgh as a region is quite progressive, and you have a lot of influence coming in. That means that you have like a synergy there that can spark new ideas, new thoughts, and maybe a little bit more open to new things as well.
Absolutely. I think the amount of like small nano and micro breweries that pop up, that's where innovation comes from in my mind. Because a lot of the time, if you're suddenly like a very big brewery, like it is more challenging for you to create something that might not be commercially successful. That's what we're trying to get back to, I think, is like we've got a really good formula for what we do, and we're always going to do that. But I think there's scope for us to look at doing a lot more small batch, a lot more innovation. And that's kind of where Stupid came from, because it's wanting us to push the boat out even further. So
that was really, really interesting. And it's been super interesting to talk with you about these beers and your brand and everything going forward. So at least, unless you have something more to add, Victor?
I have one more.
You have one more?
I have one more.
Okay, then.
Yeah, we still have some time.
We have lots of time. Okay. We want to go out. Is there any beer left?
I have some of this blackcurrant left, so...
We touched Untappd.
Go for it.
Before. And for a lot of brewers, Untappd is both good and bad. I mean, how important is Untappd for you?
It's funny because if you speak to any brewer, they will complain about Untappd.
Probably, yeah.
But if you were to speak to somebody in, let's say we all loved ice cream, and you know, you have your favorite ice cream brands, like if you speak to someone that made ice cream, they would love to have that kind of feedback at a macro level. You know, Untappd is this unbelievable tool that tells you a region and the most popular, highest rated brewery, highest rated style in that region. And then obviously you can get further data as well from it to find out the best pubs for that style of beer and the best like towns for that style of beer, where your competitors are listed, what their top rated beer is. It's an absolutely unbelievable tool. I think it just irks brewers because it's very difficult to put your heart and soul into something and then someone takes a very kind of, let's face it, a very subjective opinion on it.
Of course.
On the whole, it's pretty reliable because, you know, thousands and thousands of reviews, you start to get a really good picture of where something sits in the general scale. But it's hard, I think, if you're a small brewery especially, because if you make a lager and someone's like, I don't like lagers, one star, that can be
so feel, to buy it.
Feel very personal. Whereas I think we've got to the point now where, you know, we're in probably 500,000 reviews on Untappd now. We're rated at 3.98. And it stung a little when we dropped below 4, but that is the reality of doing that kind of volume. Like, I mean, if you're doing 500,000 reviews, you're going to reach more people that potentially don't like
it.
Yeah,
of course.
You know what I mean? Which is fine. That's all part of it. But for us in the early days, it's incredibly important. We, for a long, long time, highest rated brewery in Scotland. We won a lot of Untappd awards just in the last 6 weeks for some of the top rated pastry sours, top rated stouts. And we still use that. That's definitely marketing material. But in the early days, we used that to leverage that high score to get into export markets.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Small volumes here and there, but definitely a kind of growing interest because people were taking notice of the high, consistently high ratings.
So since we are continuing this interview, apparently, so what if you look at the Swedish market, do you know what will be available here in the coming months and what's currently available?
I don't want to spoil anything, but we are talking to the guys at Cask about some future tenders. We're also looking at potentially what we can do with Stupid in Sweden and Vault Dweller, which is one of our most sour beers ever. So we're working on what we can do. But at the moment, there's everything that we've got with us today. You can pick up in Systembolaget, but it's available. A lot of them are available on order. So it's much smaller volumes.
Yeah. But the ambition is to try to establish a bigger market here and try to attract more of this region. So is Sweden like first out or like last out of the Scandinavian countries? So you said Norway and Denmark before. Have you been longer there compared to here?
It's probably about the same. So we work with Cask in Norway as well. So it's good for us because it means that we can, you know, we've got people that we trust, they know the brand, they know what they're looking to do with it.
Yep.
And that's true for Sweden and Norway. Norway's a bigger market for us just now. But Sweden in general is obviously like has a much bigger craft beer scene. So
yep.
there's definitely scope, I think, for the sour market out here.
Yep.
And then hopefully if there's more trips to go to Singapore and Thailand, I will volunteer.
lovely. So Richard, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you.
It was really exciting to try these three beers you brought here. Really nice. And nice to have a chat with you and get a little bit more knowledge about Vault City.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Great. Thank you.
Cheers.